This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And Seattle will go with an extra man on the infield. 1-2 to Pham. Into the dirt! That skips away! Rays are going to win it! Adames crosses the plate, and the Rays pull it out 7-6.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
1-1.
She is gone! Complete again! Oh, baby!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
And JD drives one toward the left field corner, and the Mets win it! Conforto comes home with a winning run! JD Davis with a walk-off hit, and the Mets rally for two in the bottom of the 10th, and they win it!
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
Two in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this Thursday afternoon.
Woo! Week's flying right by.
Flying right by. We are 2 days away from college football officially beginning. I'm already thinking about my meal options, what I want to cook, what's the dish of choice for the opening day of college football.
You know what's funny about that stupid thought of yours? I had the same one.
What am I going to eat?
I'm going to be in Seaside Saturday. I'm staying the night there. What restaurant or bar am I going to watch that game and eat dinner?
I'm going to make some homemade salsa, first one of the year, fresh from the garden, throw it all into a bowl. That sounds good. Maybe a couple of things on the barbecue. You got to get creative, man. I'm not going to have much of like a enjoyment of football season because I'm working every Saturday. So when I get these like opportunities just to hang and like watch a couple of games, I'm soaking this one up on Saturday.
Yeah, I have no real rooting interest between these two programs, but I think aesthetically it's going to take you back to some flashbacks and some great memories of two powerhouse dominant programs at one point. The Clemson and Bama of their day.
And, to a certain extent, yeah.
And they're facing off and both are looking to regain what they used to have. Miami's been going on this for years with new coaches. They finally think they have their guy in Diaz. And then you've got Florida with Dan Mullen. They won 10 games last year. Can he build upon that? His quarterback's back. I'm just looking forward to watching football. I never expect the first game. Like the first quarter usually always sucks.
Bit of a clunker.
But after that, man, you usually get some good endings to some games to start the season.
I'm not going to lie. I'm pulling hard for Miami.
Why?
Just for the only reason of I want the SEC to take one to the chin on the opening day of college football. I would get a decent level of enjoyment out of that.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate here for you, for your wishes. Florida loses, Miami wins, Monday show. Hey, guys, I thought you said the ACC sucked.
See, that won't be out there. That opinion will not change until we see a couple of teams crack the top 25 or until we see Willie Taggart get off to a 3-0 or 4-0 start at Florida State. Like, one win will not change the perception. Just like if Oregon beats Auburn in, what, 9 days, 8 days, however far away we are, the national perception won't all of a sudden be, look at that, the Pac-12's good. Like, it'll be a nice little bragging point. Like, hey, we finally won a big game on a national stage. But it won't sway the entire opinion. The SEC wins these games all the time, man. I want to see them take one in the chin, to get Florida knocked down, get them out of the college football playoff conversation. Move on.
I disagree with you. What's going to be the narrative if Oregon loses to Auburn?
It'll be more of the same.
But it's going to be, oh, look, the Pac-12 can't even beat the third or fourth best team in the SEC, right?
Right.
Is that fair? I don't think that's fair. It's the first game. Some teams are rusty. Some teams aren't, what have you. But people do walk away even from one game. I remember this 2 or 3 years ago. The Thursday night kickoff game was the Panthers and Broncos Super Bowl rematch.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being a good game, came down to the wire. Trevor Siemian was the quarterback. and they won on a last second field goal. And I had went on the show for 2 weeks going into that season. And when we talked about the Broncos, I said, Trevor Siemian's not good. This isn't going to work. And Bronco fan, as soon as Monday came and that game was done, or Friday show, texting in, feeling all high and mighty about themselves because they were 1-0. 3 weeks later, their quarterback was garbage. So I do think people do react quite a bit. In fact, way overreact to even week ones in any league.
That's true. But the reality will eventually be reset.
Yeah. Like Miami will lose a game they shouldn't.
And they're going to lose to Florida Atlantic in week two. And then all of a sudden it's going to be back to the normal ACC. That's why I don't freak out over people, saying, oh, I thought the ACC was garbage, man. I'm all in on Miami. Give me the chain. I want the turnover chain. I'm throwing up U's in my house. Let's go Hurricanes.
I do miss Miami being good.
It's better for college football when they're good. They're entertaining.
I think of all the programs being really good, USC needs to be really good soon for our conference's sake. But I think of the good teams that are no longer good, because think about that one for a second. How many programs can you name that you grew up with, or that you just remember so many seasons they were the dominant team or program, that aren't any good anymore? I want Miami to be good. Of all the big national known teams, I think I want Miami to be great again.
I mean, the three prime ones are probably Miami, Nebraska, and USC. And USC's had flashes over the last couple, the Darnold year. I mean, they had some good years. It's not like they've been as bad as Nebraska or Miami now for a considerable amount of time. But those are probably the three ones. You think back to the last 20 years or so and how dominant those programs were when we were kids.
What about Florida State even?
Florida State, sure. But Florida State just won a national title like 5 years ago.
I know, but 5 years when you're a national team seems like a decade.
And they were in the college football playoff the year after that. So, like, they've had some good seasons. They're not as down as Nebraska or Miami.
Also, nobody wants to see the coach there win.
Well, the thing, too, about Miami that I find interesting is they didn't start Tate Martell.
Yeah, they went with was he a freshman or is he a sophomore?
That's his name. I got it right here. It's Jaren Williams.
He's
a redshirt freshman.
That's right. I think he played one or two games last year for him.
Yeah, let me look up his.
Because they have that new rule where you can still redshirt.
You can play a little bit.
Yeah.
But that caught a lot of people. His stats don't even show up, so it must not have been a lot. That caught a lot of people off guard because Tate Martell was a highly touted kid. And he transferred out of Ohio State the second Justin Fields got there. And we all just kind of penciled him in as the starter. He's going to be the guy down in Miami. So they're going a redshirt freshman, changing things up. I've even seen they're throwing Tate Martell at wide receiver the last couple of weeks in practice. I mean, we all know he's probably going to transfer unless there's an injury early in the season. He ends up playing quarterback. That's just the kind of kid he is. But I thought that was pretty fascinating that they didn't go with the obvious choice, which was Tate Martell. Everybody thought it was going to be him.
I think Tate Martell is going to be the new Blake Barnett. And if you don't know that name, Blake Barnett, that's perfectly okay. He was a five-star kid from Arizona. He chose, I believe he started at
I think he started
Alabama.
At Alabama.
He went to Alabama.
Lost the job.
He's a California kid because I knew somebody that knew him. And he went to Alabama, lost the job. Then he went to ASU. He was at ASU for maybe 2 months. Then he transferred to South Florida, and now he's the starting quarterback for South Florida. So, I mean, it was a journey. Obviously, the commitment part of it, not as important to him. And he found his place to start. So maybe that will be what Tate Martell does.
And he was one of those five-star kids, too. Like, he was a highly touted recruit.
He killed it in California.
Yeah, he was at Alabama for 2 years. He played in three games his second year at Alabama, I think as a redshirt freshman in 2016. Ends up losing the job, transfers, was at ASU, played in two games at ASU. In 2017, transferred again, and then, was the starter last year in his junior year at South Florida. Now he's back for another season with the Bulls, baby.
Yeah.
Modern-day college football. You got to love it.
So we're 2 days, folks, away from football season kicking off in college with Miami in Florida. We're pretty jacked about it, obviously. We just spent our first segment on it. Let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Dirt and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events you say, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap, brought to you on The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. We got the Ezekiel Elliott thing I want to get into a little bit. We've steered clear of it for a few days.
There's fresh reports out.
But there's some new reports that we're going to get into. We have a stop at the Daily Ticker at number two, Alabama, with Kirk McNair of Bama Online, the 24/7 website. He is going to join us. We'll do our preview for the number two team, Alabama. No 9 a.m. kickoffs in Pac-12 play this year. That was officially leaked yesterday.
Hallelujah.
We'll bring some more information to that one. I do want to dive into it. I talked about this while you were out when we had Damon Heward on. I talked more about how Washington seems to kind of be flying under the radar a little bit. But they have a little concerning situation. Maybe it's concerning, maybe it's not actually. Jake Haener is battling with Jacob Eason as the starting quarterback. And I think just the top teams in the conference, they always deserve the attention when something like this is going down. So we'll check in on that one because a lot of people assumed it was just Jacob Eason's job. And it sounds like Jake Haener's really making this interesting.
It's exactly what we just talked about with Miami.
Right.
We've gone about the wisdom that we know who the starter's going to be. And here we are a week away from the season starting and we don't know who the starter is.
Heward, you may have missed this. Heward mentioned Haener and says he reminds him. He doesn't play exactly like him. Reminds him of Russell Wilson.
Oh, wow.
A shorter-ish quarterback who has monster mitts. And a really strong arm.
Can move around a little bit, yeah. Make plays.
And then Eason, he's the taller 6'6", prototypical, what GMs would drool over in 1996 NFL draft stuff. But it sounds like his accuracy's been a little iffy in some of the practices.
Yeah, I think that just depends on your perspective and how you want to look at it. That's either a big positive or a big negative at this point in camp.
No doubt about it. We got a lot of NFL notes to get to today, so we'll do that, including one from Matt Nagy. The Bears head coach had a very interesting strategy with finding his next kicker. You remember Cody Parkey missed the 43-yard field goal kick in the playoffs.
The double doink, the infamous double doink.
The double doink did not go over the uprights. It went under, and that led them to cutting him.
That was a dong.
And so they are looking for their new kicker, and his strategy was very interesting. There's a Devin Booker story out there. These pickup videos, you guys see these on Instagram or Twitter, the highlights, right? These guys go to the same gym, and it's like, oh, watch rapper J. Cole drop 13 three-pointers in 10 minutes.
Got a smooth jumper.
And then you watch the highlights, and you realize nobody plays defense at these things. Well, there's a bit of a problem with that with Devin Booker, and so I want to bring this story. It's more of a personal philosophy on how you view pickup basketball. We'll bring that at crunch time. Sometime in the 2 o'clock hour, I'm quite excited for this. So Popeyes has introduced a new item on their menu, a chicken sandwich.
This has caught the world by storm.
And they basically came at Chick-fil-A and said, this is our game now. They've had playful social media banter, but it's gotten so serious that people who love Popeyes are flocking now to try this sandwich.
To the point where they're like running out of chicken at Popeyes locations.
There are Popeyes locations that have closed at like 5 o'clock in the evening.
Like, sorry, we don't know what to tell you, man. We're out of chicken. We got none left.
Can't make them anymore. We are all out. And we've got audio to back this. And we also have a friend of the show, Kyle Knepper, is going to bring us chicken sandwiches into the studio.
That he is.
And we're gonna be honest with you guys and tell you if it's better than Chick-fil-A, as good as Chick-fil-A, or worse than Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, no matter your opinions of Chick-fil-A, you know they make a solid chicken sandwich. Like, it's good. They make a good chicken sandwich.
And Popeyes makes mean fried chicken.
That they do.
Really good fried chicken.
I feel like what you got to do is recruit a second person to also go get you Chick-fil-A head-to-head taste test.
See, I've had a lot of Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A in your day.
But side-by-side is different than what you remember.
That is true. That is a valid point. Cutting them in half and then having one and then the other, and we'll do a taste grading.
Well, maybe we'll have Nepper stop at Chick-fil-A and grab a sandwich or something,
that's
too.
One more
but you
stop.
Can't let the Popeyes get cold, otherwise you get a bad rating.
That's right.
No, I'm not going to give it a bad rating because I like cold
now,
chicken sandwiches.
Should it be also a blind test?
No.
Should we eat them without the wrapper on to know just which sandwich was better, 1A or 1B?
You'll be able to tell by the breading.
Okay.
So we're going to...
I feel like I'll know Chick-fil-A's too. Like, I know the flavor, I know the taste.
That's kind of how I feel as well. So we'll do a taste test today on the show. We've got Mike's bag of plums, although you might be going, why did you say Mike when that's Buck?
We've got dual producers today.
Buck is going till 1. Mike worked a long-ass day yesterday.
That he did. He had to run our duck show we did in Eugene last night and do the Hot Corner after that.
He did our show.
Yeah.
He did primetime. He did the duck show, which went 6 to 8, and then did Hot Corner 8 to 9. So he was in here for a while. He'll be in at 1 o'clock, and we'll get to that. That's what's on tap for today's show, and it's brought to you on the fan by Pelican Brewing Company. We'll start if your team needed to pay somebody, which player would you rather your team pay? Jalen Smith or Ezekiel Elliott? We'll dive into the update on Zeke next on 1080 The Fan. And we each
set. This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. The first thing that came to our heads just so happened to be
the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world. All right, welcome back in. 1218 on The Fan. Dirt and Sprague with you on this Thursday afternoon. Ed Werder tweeted this morning, the update on Ezekiel Elliott. Give me a second here. Boy, Ed Werder tweets a lot.
Does he really? Is he firing him off left and right?
Well, I realize I don't follow Ed Werder.
I do not either. The only real NFL beat guy or breaking news guy that I actually, two, Rappaport and Schefter. Those are the two I go with.
Okay, well, Ed Werder, I can't even find it, and Twitter's webpage is kind of being stupid. Here it is. Okay, I finally found it. Sources to Ed Werder, the most recent offer in negotiations between Zeke and the Cowboys came from the team. Elliott has been offered a contract making him one of the NFL's two highest paid running backs. That would suggest team offering more than Le'Veon Bell and less than Todd Gurley.
So just to give you an example, if we're talking average per year salary, Todd Gurley's at 14.3 in his deal. Le'Veon Bell is 13.1. So you're looking somewhere in the middle of that. I would also assume it's somewhere in the middle of the total value and the total guaranteed. So Gurley's total value is $57.5 million. Le'Veon Bell is $52.5 million. And then the guaranteed is $45 million for Gurley, $35 million for Le'Veon Bell. So you're slotting him somewhere in the middle of those two guys.
Yeah, so we haven't heard an update whether Zeke is happy about that or not, unhappy, whatever. But ultimately, second highest paid in the league. Now, I did a poll question on our show page because Jalen Smith, their linebacker, they took out of the draft from Notre Dame, who suffered just a horrific injury. They took him in the second round, and that was criticized pretty heavily because people didn't know if he'd be able to run anymore. He had real nerve damage with his ACL tear. Well, they took him, and he's been nothing but really good, and they signed him to a five-year contract extension worth $64 million. That includes $35.5 million guaranteed. He'll also receive a $5 million signing bonus. So I asked the question on Twitter, if your team could only pay one player, would you rather pay Jalen Smith or would you rather pay Ezekiel Elliott?
Yeah, there's almost two things to unpack here. First, the Jalen Smith one, I always loved that pick for the Cowboys. I know there was injury concerns, but you were talking about a guy that everybody felt like was a top 10 pick, and he fell to the second round.
Because might have been top five.
Might have been top five. That's how dominant he was. And he actually was one of the first guys that started the trend of people not wanting to play in bowl games because they saw that injury happen. It was, I believe, the Fiesta Bowl that they were playing in, and all of a sudden he's a second-round pick and he lost out on a lot of money. Well, at least he's now gotten it at this point in his career with the contract extension. So I always liked that pick for Dallas. And again, with the Gurley stuff, you have to ask the questions of what number are we talking about? So you could say we offered him a deal to be the second highest paid running back in the league. Okay, is that in total value? Is that in the average per year salary? Is that in the total guaranteed amount of money? That's always the tough part, again, with these reports, is we don't know every specific detail of the contract. Maybe it's a high value, but not a lot guaranteed. Maybe it's a lot per year, but not a lot guaranteed, or a lot guaranteed, but not much per year. There's a lot of different angles to go there. But to answer the poll question, it is Jalen Smith. I think he's a guy who's proven he can stay healthy. He's proven to be consistent. He's cheaper than Ezekiel Elliott. He's had zero off-the-field issues. He's a leader of your defense at this point in his career. And for Zeke, that's always been the biggest concern. I know he's been an absolute stud when he's on the field and when he's performing, and he hasn't been hurt either, but you're always worried about the off-the-field incidents. He's had one basically every year of his NFL career where he has to go meet with the commissioner, and you're wondering, is there a suspension coming? Is there something else that's going to happen here? And so if you're going to hand out that kind of money to a player, give me the guy who's in the lineup every Sunday, who's not causing any troubles, and he's one of the best linebackers in the NFL.
See, that's isn't that the funny thing, though, is we've talked about how Dak in the offense isn't as great, obviously, if Ezekiel Elliott's not there. Right, Tony Pollard might be a good running back for Dallas this year, but it's kind of like Le'Veon and James Conner, right? James Conner had a 1,000-yard season. He was a good player for Pittsburgh. Le'Veon Bell was getting you like 1,400 yards. There's a big difference between the production between the two players, in my opinion. Zeke, as amazing as he is, I ended up siding with Jalen as well when I voted on the poll question, just because I thought to myself, what would I rather have locked down? Well, I'd rather have both, but if I had to pick, I'm going with the one that's going to save me more cap space, Jalen Smith.
Yep.
And I'm going to go with one that when he is healthy, and he hasn't really had injury concerns in the NFL quite yet, despite coming out of college with big question marks, I'm taking the guy at a position that can impact the game on a major, major level.
And you feel like for a long-term period, too. It doesn't feel like linebackers, at least, are short-term, and you're worried about him falling off at 28.
I mean, as great as, like, the Legion of Boom was, and as great as the defense was in Baltimore, you kind of look at both those situations and you go, oh, yeah, they had real anchors down at their linebacker positions in Wagner and Ray Lewis. We've seen what linebackers are capable of and how important they are to a defense. I'll take that. As great as Ezekiel Elliott is, as important to the offense that he is, you are getting into more money when you get to Zeke versus you're saving a little bit when you go to Jalen Smith.
Yeah.
And I also think that shows the conundrum of Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones. This seems like an easy no-brainer, pay Ezekiel Elliott. But man, in this league, running backs just cannot get the contracts they think they deserve. And I don't think we're ever going to get back to that point. And if we do, we're talking years down the road when the game has drastically changed due to rules.
I think it would take one of these guys getting a big-time contract and living up to every penny of it. And then maybe you won't have the same trepidation when it comes to paying these guys. Like, let's play the hypothetical right now. Todd Gurley doesn't get banged up last year. Todd Gurley finishes the season on his dominant run, MVP-caliber player. The Rams are in the Super Bowl because of him and what he does for that offense. Is there the same level of fear? Probably not. There's still fear because it's running backs and you're just worried about them breaking down at some point and you don't want to commit a lot of money to them. But it feels like in the current day when we talk about these guys, a lot of the fear comes from you just handed Todd Gurley $57.5 total million in a contract. And 1 year later, we don't know how healthy he is or how close to 100% he's going to be. You couldn't rely on him late in the season last year. I think that has really amplified a lot of the concerns about paying a running back. And I'll say this about Zeke. If he didn't have, let's say you flip the off-field stuff, Jalen Smith and Zeke. Jalen Smith was the one that was suspended. Jalen Smith was the one that was getting in trouble off the field and having to meet with Roger Goodell. I would change my answer. I would, because Zeke, to me, is arguably the best running back in the NFL. He fits that offense perfectly. He helps your young quarterback, who we think has limitations, tremendously. But when it comes to committing that amount of money to a guy, that amount of guaranteed money to a guy who you just don't know if you can trust him off the field, that's the biggest fear for me.
Yeah, here's the other question for you. Who's worthy at that position then? If Ezekiel Elliott's not, who is?
Well, I think you wait and see how Christian McCaffrey continues to develop.
Let's say he has a monster year this year. Are the Panthers?
He is. He should be. If he's a guy that can go for 1,000 and 1,000, how are you not going to pay that?
Because
see, that I have a different stance on running backs than some. I don't think that you can just replace some dime a dozen, no big deal, you lose McCaffrey, you're going to be totally fine.
But what if Pittsburgh goes to the playoffs this year, they get to the AFC title game, Connor has a 11 or 1,200 yards, Bell has a great year, but the Jets suck? That's the answer, right? Like,
sure, you got to pay Connor.
I'm not even trying to argue with you. I'm just saying I think when you look at it from the team perspective, when they don't pay these guys at that position and then they get the replacement and the production's fine and they still win, in their minds, they're able to move on and it's not a big deal.
For every single one of those guys, you can point to a Connor replacing Le'Veon Bell and maybe having a seamless transition. I'll point to an example like Seattle. Marshawn Lynch was their offense. You didn't have to have a good offensive line. You hand them the ball, and if they do it in the Super Bowl, they win back-to-back. He was a force. And when he left, how long did it take Seattle to find a consistent running game? How many running backs were
until Chris Carson last year, who got 1,000 yards?
I mean, you're talking 4 years. You had a carousel where you're bringing different guys in, drafting guys, trying to find the guy. Like, let's not act like every running back you bring in off the street is just going to be easily going for 1,000 yards.
Absolutely.
It's not that simple. And the point on Connor as well is he's got 2 years left on his deal. So, sure, maybe you have a good year. Maybe he's producing at a high level. You're going to have to pay him eventually. Are you going to franchise tag him in 2021? Like, you're going to continue to go through these issues no matter who your running back
is. Let's take the New England example, and then we'll go to the Daily Ticker here. New England is maybe the worst team.
I don't like using that as an example.
I get it, but they don't pay running backs, right? They're the shining beacon example of guys or a team that doesn't pay running backs. Sony Michel, I heard Schlereth say this, and he's probably right. They're probably not going to get him a second contract.
No, they'll probably play him for 3 or 4 years, and then thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, we're going to go draft the next guy, and we're going to go for cheap. So New England's not maybe the best example to use here, but
because they can do that with almost any position.
Well, let's take Kansas City this year. Damian Williams is replacing basically Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt gets the incident last year. He goes away. We'll see what kind of productions he's able to get, because we saw how damn good Kareem Hunt was in that offense. If Damian Williams just steps up and gives you the same production, you know, in Chicago, many people thought, oh, it's Tariq Cohen. Tariq Cohen's the guy. Jordan Howard's gone. He's in Philly. Well, they got this David Montgomery kid from, I think he's from Memphis. He's supposed to be all world, just blowing people away. So I think my point, Dirt, is there is value in these players. I don't like how easily we just brush running backs to the side and act like their athleticism and their abilities don't mean anything. But I think teams increasingly are just feeling more confident that they can replace it. Even if it's a little less statistically, they can get on without it.
Yeah.
And their more important positions are offensive line, quarterback, wide out, safety, sure, linebacker, what have you.
And I understand it more in places like Dallas because they have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. You know, Seattle was the example that I used it going negatively because they didn't have a good offensive line. They couldn't run the football, and you put all the pressure in the world on your quarterback to essentially do everything for you. So I understand maybe Dallas says, hey, we got great guys up front. We're fine no matter who's back there. And there's some organizations that can get away with that, and there's going to be a lot of them that can't, because if you don't have a dominant offensive line, running backs are not a dime a dozen. You can't just transition one to the other and expect the same level of production. I do think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out with Zeke, too, because he's technically under contract for three more years if Dallas wants
him. I think it's two.
Well, he's got two more years up, but then 12. They can franchise tag him if they want. You can franchise tag him back-to-back years if you want, like the Steelers did with Le'Veon Bell. Like, this guy is not on the brink of free agency, and I wish his agent would get in his ear and say, stop caring about the title of being the highest-paid running back. They just offered you really damn good money right around where Gurley and Le'Veon Bell is. Let's get this over with. Sign your deal. You got guaranteed money. Go back to camp and let's get this thing over with.
So the Cowboys paid Jalen Smith $65 million, 35 guaranteed, and they offered reportedly from Ed Werder to give Zeke the second most money behind Gurley in the NFL. We haven't heard if Zeke is happy about this or whatnot, but I find it interesting because they still have Dak and Amari Cooper as well, and Jalen Smith was the first one to get a contract. The running back position, man, it's a real fascinating time right now in the NFL for running backs and how you can truly value them. Okay, coming up next, we'll go to the Daily Ticker. Our number two team, Dirt, we only have two teams left.
This is it. Two more days, man.
We started this and I felt like, oh, this is going to go quick.
Here we are.
It went quicker than that. Alabama, will they be able to recover from their loss in the national championship game and get some redemption? Or are they not stacking up quite as great against Clemson yet again? Daily Ticker is next, but first, is it Buck or is it Mike? Is it Buck? Buck with a sports update.
Break, visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in Daily Ticker time here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Our number two team on the top 25 dirty poll is no surprise to anybody out there. It's the Alabama Crimson Tide, who have just been dominating the SEC and dominating college football. They lost last year in the title game. I believe one of, if not the worst loss for Nick Saban in his career. Clemson just really got to him. So we're seeing how they can recover this year. Tua back again at quarterback. They have the Biletnikoff Award winner, 14-1 season a year ago. We talked with Kurt McNair of Bama Online, the 24/7 website, and he's on Twitter at Kirk McNair, and he joins us now. Kirk, thanks for hanging out with us up here in Portland, Oregon. We appreciate the time. I'll just start with last year's team. They fall short in the title game. Not a great outing for them against Clemson. Are we feeling like they have the talent to be able to beat Clemson this year, or do you feel like they're still missing something?
Well, I can't think of anything they're missing except they've been inconsistent on extra points. They went in last year. They've had some bad luck, injury luck at linebacker for the last 2 years, and started out this year with another one losing their middle, one of their middle linebackers. And other than that, I would say that they're pretty deep and pretty talented all up and down the board, really.
Well, one of the things Nick Saban has pointed to as to maybe why that game got so out of hand last year was the coaching turnover that he's experienced on his staff and how many guys have come and gone in the last couple of years. And Clemson's a program that hasn't necessarily gone through that. How much have you seen that? I mean, being around this program and following it, just coaches coming and going, and Nick Saban is known for fixing guys up who maybe are down on their luck in terms of coaching. How tough is that for him to overcome?
Well, I think it was pretty tough last year because you had one guy who had, the offensive coordinator had already accepted a job as head coach at Maryland and yet continued to work. And, you know, working for Nick Saban and being a head football coach somewhere else, there aren't enough hours in the day for that. So I think and then, of course, with him, with the offensive coordinator leaving, then you started to have a lot of other people looking for jobs, and they were obviously in the market. And, you know, if you're doing more than one thing, you're probably not doing either one very well. And the one that Nick Saban had to be concerned with is that he didn't feel like preparation for the Clemson game was very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kirk McNair is our guest, covering Alabama for Bama Online, the 24/7 website. He's on Twitter at Kirk McNair. You know, Nick Saban is one that he's a respected voice. It's been in this game a long time. So when he steps to the podium and occasionally gives his thoughts on the transfer portal or scheduling or anything, a lot of people run with it and they react to it, or they agree or they disagree. Where do you think, Kirk, his opinions start to formulate? Because we've seen over the years, he also changes his opinion. He used to hate the spread, said it was unhealthy, and then he ran the system. He used to argue that the scheduling, that fans should show up no matter who they play, and then he just recently came out and said we should be playing Power 5 good teams. Where do you think he sculpts his opinions?
Well, I think he's a pretty good thinker. And then when it comes to football, he's an exceptional thinker. And I think what he was saying, and has been saying for years, is he wants the SEC to play either 9 or 10 conference games. As you know, the SEC and the ACC play only 8. And he's also been saying that he's saying 10, but what he really thinks is that, and what he's really said many times, is that the Power 5 team shouldn't be playing anything but Power 5 teams. Now, I realize there are probably some places where there'd be a natural rival, but I'm sure he'd understand that exception. Mm-hmm. But he wants tough schedules, and one reason he maybe wants it mandated that Power Fives play Power Fives is it so he can get some more Power Fives. Alabama right now, and understandably, well, as he said we were having a private, not a private conversation, but a off-the-record conversation, which I won't mind sharing this. He said, we have contacted every Power Five team in the country, and we finally have gotten some home and homes with some teams. But he said, we just have a hard time getting anyone to play us. And I don't understand that. I said, well, I understand it. They don't want to get a loss.
Right.
So, and then on the transfer portal thing, he's not against transfers. He understands that. He just thinks there needs to be some sort of there shouldn't be – you can just transfer willy-nilly and then play right away. For years and years and years, forever. If you transferred, you had to sit out a year, you know, sort of a penance for doing that. And that's particularly true when they transfer within the conference. And he's lost 3 coaches and in the last couple of years, 2 of them in the SEC, and they both took players from Alabama with them. And we're able to play immediately. So he's not against the transfer. He just thinks there needs to be some sort of – that the waiver was way too liberal. And I think in the early going, people were saying, what the heck? They're just transferring because of competition. And, you know, they said now they're going to toughen that up a little bit, so we'll see.
Yeah, looking at the schedule, talking about that, we would all love, I think, having nothing but Power 5 opponents. We would be huge fans of that out here, getting rid of some of those non-conference games early in the season that fans don't get too excited about. But looking at Alabama's schedule this year, they ease into a Duke, New Mexico State first couple of weeks. What are the ones that you think they should circle and be a little concerned about? They've been so dominant in the regular season in years of past, but Auburn, LSU, A&M, who are the ones that concern Alabama the most?
Yeah, you just named them, maybe not in the right order. I would say A&M looks, you know, just looking at the schedule, that looks like the game that Alabama really needs to be on its A game for. They've got a good team. Texas A&M's probably, I feel sure, is a better team this year than they were last year. But that schedule they've got, it may not show it. They've got to play at Clemson, at Georgia, at LSU, and then have Alabama at home. Not to mention the rest of their conference games, but those are some that you notice for A&M. So I think A&M is the one that I would be concerned about if I was an Alabama fan or coach or player. And then LSU and Auburn are both always really tough. Mm-hmm. They have LSU at home, and but have to go to Auburn for the last game of the year, which is a tough place to play. So those are the three that you'd really say are tough. And really, to be honest with you, when you look at Alabama's home schedule this year, in fact, I was just looking at it. I'd gotten confirmed for my credentials and just kind of read down the list, and it's pathetic, really. And it shouldn't be. Tennessee shouldn't be so bad. And they'll probably get back one day, but they're a long way from it right now.
Absolutely. Kirk McNair is our guest here. Bama Online, the 24/7 website covering Alabama football. You mentioned at the top, I mean, you're not really sure they have a weakness outside of extra points. I know it's easy to fall in love with the highlights of different players, but Kirk, if you were to put money on what player you think has the best NFL career of the starters on both sides, who would you put your money on?
Oh, man, I hadn't thought about that. You know, Alabama puts more people into the NFL than anybody. They're not all going to be stars, but certainly you'd start with Tua. He's the real deal. Jerry Jeudy, you mentioned the Biletnikoff winner at wide receiver, and Alabama's had some pretty good luck with wide receivers that have gone into the NFL, and people like Julio Jones and Amari Cooper and Calvin Ridley recently. You know, I'd kind of say one of those two on offense, but on defense, Dylan Moses would be the guy you'd look at. He's a fantastic inside linebacker.
Well, and I was going to ask you actually about Tua, because I think his last two games, not a great impression the last two, because he gets banged up in the Georgia game, wasn't playing well, they were getting blown out, and then they come back with Jalen Hurts. And then in the title game, obviously, we all watched the title game and what happened there. Just what? How big a year like this is it is for Tua, the expectations, and trying to live up to what his name has become?
Well, I don't have any concerns about Tua. He's an unbelievable athlete, hard worker, you know, everything everybody would want in a quarterback, really, great leader. And he was. When you're one-legged, you're not at your best. And it was bad luck that he actually hurt himself in practice and then had it exacerbated in the Georgia game and still wasn't back to full strength for Clemson. But, you know, you can't put it all on Tua for the Clemson game. That was a total team loss.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, from start to finish.
And also great credit to Clemson, too. I mean, Trevor Lawrence had a fabulous game, and his receivers were, you know, just unbelievable. And you see that every now and then where, you know, and it's perfect time. Your team has its best game of the year, Clemson did, and Alabama, unfortunately, probably had its worst.
All right, as quickly as possible, Kirk, will Dabo Swinney be the head coach at Bama after Nick Saban is long and gone?
Oh, Lord, no. He's got it made where he is. He'd be an idiot to follow Nick Saban. I don't know who that'll be, but there's a guy out your way we think about a lot, Mario Cristobal.
Wow, really?
Interesting.
You guys, that's like a thing people talk about, is Cristobal going to Bama?
That name comes up a good bit. You know, I think it's pretty far down the road, and lots of things can change. But, you know, if it happened real quick, I think he'd be on the list.
Oh, there we go. Kirk McNair of Bama Online, 24/7 website. He's on Twitter at Kirk McNair. Kirk, thanks so much for the time and previewing the Crimson Tide with us, man.
My pleasure, guys.
All right, there we go.
Roll Tide.
There's just going to drop that one at the end of the interview there?
Yeah, that was an interesting. I mean, I'm not surprised by that. He was at Alabama for 3 or 4 years.
I got to be really honest. I kind of am. If I'm a Bama fan, I'm unhinged. But
sure.
I mean, I know he's recruiting well at Oregon. It's encouraging. But don't you want to see more as a coach before
without a doubt.
Throwing his name into that?
Without a doubt. But it doesn't surprise me that programs think that way. Would you have thought that Florida State could do better than Willie Taggart?
Oh, 1,000,000%, sure.
But that's where they went.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted a guy who had local ties, knew the program. It's his dream job kind of thing. And it was a long-term thing. So I think he's alluding to if Cristobal has success at Oregon and wins and proves he's a good head coach, then that's a name that they'll always consider.
The text line. I just opened the text line.
Roll Tide, baby, roll Tide.
There's a part of me that does feel bad for Kirk for this reason.
Alabama.
Dirt, if your favorite team or a team you cover very closely becomes Alabama or Clemson,
wins 5 national championships,
like I don't know how you do a radio hit and kind of sound unbiased. It's almost impossible, isn't it? Because are you going to go on there and go, well, I'll tell you what, that offensive line
is a major concern.
It's like, well, they're going to go undefeated, so.
Yeah, they're going to win every game probably. They'll cruise to the SEC title game. Maybe Georgia trips them up, and then you just got to hope somebody can upset them in the college football playoff again this year. I think that's a valid point. You would be a homer, too, if your team had won 5 national championships. The whole transfer portal thing and that stuff drives me nuts. Like, Saban can bounce around from job to job if he wants. He doesn't have to sit out a year when he goes. If he wanted to take the Texas job, does he have to sit out a year before he can coach Texas? No, it's ridiculous. It's a double standard, and I hate the old fuddy-duddy way of thinking about that with players when coaches don't have to pay the same penalty. I also don't necessarily buy, too, that they struggle to find teams with a home-and-home for Alabama.
Oregon State would sign up for that tomorrow.
In a heartbeat. To say Alabama will come to Corvallis, Oregon. You would sell out that game immediately. It would be biggest non-conference game in the history of the program.
Like, zero chance they've called even half of the Power 5. Because they have no interest in like, why would they ever, Bama, want to do a home-and-home with a program of Oregon State caliber? They'd get nothing from coming to Corvallis. They can never come to Oregon, and the top player in Oregon will always consider Alabama. So they look at this from a recruiting standpoint, right? What's going to help us in recruiting? Now, I'll give you credit for this. They went to Wisconsin, but, I mean, go look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin's always putting out big, heavy, Midwestern offensive line kids who eat nothing but Oreos and cheese curds. If I'm Nick Saban, I want that kid on my team, too. Let's do a home and home. Here we go.
Yeah.
All right, so there's your preview for Alabama. Coming up next, the Pac-12 announces good news for us, and we'll tell you what it is next on The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague, Gone 1080, The Fan.
Hey, we got some good news from ESPN yesterday. They wrote a story, Kyle Bonagura. They used to have Pac-12 blogs. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah, Ted Miller, man. I used to read that thing religiously.
He's living the good life in Scottsdale.
Is he?
Mm-hmm. I think he's a teacher. He wrote a story about the Pac-12. You remember, we talked about this for a few different shows. The Pac-12 had kicked around the idea of a 9 a.m. kick, and many people sounded off about that one. The players, former players, you had people that really were against it. Well, the Pac-12 had decided to move forward with not doing any 9 a.m. kicks this season, but is open to revisiting the idea presumably in the future, because they say future, that's probably going to be next year. They'll kick around the idea again. Let's see. Andrew Walker, the Pac-12's VP for Public Affairs, said schools needed more time to plan for any earlier kickoff slot. Quote, our interested schools need more lead time for discussions with all relevant stakeholders. This is interest from Fox, and there is interest from some of our schools, but we need more time to plan properly. So you actually have a couple of schools that loved this idea. I'd love to know who they are.
Fine, let them apply for it then.
Yeah, let them the schools be the 9 a.m. choose.
If you want to be a 9 a.m. kick, you can be a 9 a.m. kick school, but don't force the other ones to do it.
Several coaches, including Chip Whittingham and Justin Wilcox, all expressed interest in playing the early game when it was raised earlier last month.
Yeah, and then every other coach in the conference thought it was the dumbest thing they've ever heard of. Almost 100% of the players that were asked about this said it was a terrible idea and they wanted no part of it. And I'm glad at least in the short term, the Pac-12 has come to their senses on this. It's dumb. It's stupid. It's not going to up the profile of your conference. It's not going to change the landscape of anything. It's a ridiculously stupid idea that penalizes fans who attend games. And I'm glad at least we don't have to deal with it in 2019.
Yeah, I think this was great news. I mean,
it's still concerning because it's the Pac-12 and they do stupid nonsense all the time. And at some point it's probably going to happen.
Don't you think this is happening?
I mean, I think the backlash will continue, and I hope the coaches continue to speak out on it. This was a major issue at the Pac-12 media days, and there were some hilarious quotes out there from guys talking about how, like, wait, we got to get the players saying we got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go through our pregame routine. We're going to be half asleep. Fans who have to drive 2+ hours somewhere to get to a game got to leave at the crack of dawn. Like,
what about the I apologies if this was in an earlier report and I can't recall. What about kicking around the idea of playing non-conference and a Pac-12 school? For example, UCLA is going to Cincinnati this year.
Play that game at 9 a.m. if you want.
And that's what I was going to say is
knock your socks off.
You play it at the 9 a.m. window. It counts as a Pac-12 team. but it's a non-conference game, and the team playing is right. In Ohio.
Well, and somebody said Colorado and Utah is no big deal. Well, it's still 10 a.m. You're an hour ahead. Sure, I understand that, but it's still a 10 o'clock a.m. kickoff. And even for the one, so when we wake up and watch those games that are usually Big Ten games on at 9 a.m., for most of those teams and areas, that is an 11 a.m. local kick. So it's not great, not ideal, because Oregon had an 11 a.m. kick last year against Portland State, and it sucked, and there was no buzz and energy at Autzen Stadium. But, yeah, at least you can make it there in time and have a day out of it and enjoy the experience a little bit. 11 a.m. is drastically different from 10, and 10 is drastically different from 9 a.m.
Well, I know Whittingham obviously says he's probably into it with Chip and Wilcox, but I still can't imagine Utah fan being all that ecstatic about 10 a.m. I mean, 11 a.m. West Coast time is already tough enough, and they're an hour ahead.
Well, I would ask this, too, because I don't know off the top of my head. Maybe somebody does. What percentage of the attending fan base at Utah lives around the area? Because Utah is in Salt Lake City, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm imagining.
I know nothing about Utah's demographic.
So that's right. And this was my point all along. Like, if you have someplace like that and you want to kick off early, it's not as big of a deal. You don't have. I mean, there are still going to be fans that drive. Don't get me wrong. But the analogy I always use is if Oregon or Oregon State played in Portland, the University of Oregon's located in Portland, or Oregon State University located in Portland, and you kicked off a game at 9 a.m., it's not as big of a deal because you don't have to drive an hour and a half or 2 hours to get to the stadium to get set up. You could get up, walk over, and leave your house at 6:30 in the morning and still have 2 hours to tailgate if it was located in the city.
Yeah. So Pac-12 says no thanks to 9 a.m. this year, but they will kick it around probably next year. All right, hour number two straight ahead. A quarterback battle that we didn't think would be one is really developing. We'll talk about that more. Hour two straight ahead on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.